silence, there is a sacred place, a secret meeting place. Love is there. In the silence, where every color blends and every rainbow runs, good is there. In the light, now you find that you know peace of mind. In the silence, your path is paved in gold, and all your dreams unfold. Love is there.
As we come to this time of meditation, I'd like to invite you to, if you're able, look at this candle and the flame on it. And if you're not able to see it, maybe look at the candles, you know, that are behind me. And just as you observe the flame, be reminded, here we call it the Christ candle, the Christ consciousness candle. For you, it may mean or be named something else. But the common idea or the thought is that flame is the awareness of the divine, the sacred, the transcendent God that is present. So just allow yourself to take that in visually. And then just either keeping your eyes open on the flame or allowing them to close, allowing your eyes to close. Can you in your mind's eye find the light of that flame inside? Maybe in your heart, maybe in your gut, maybe throughout your whole body. What we're doing is connecting again to the love that we are. And as you do that, with gentleness and kindness and curiosity, maybe noticing if there's any resistance or difficulty. And if so, can you just be in this present moment with an undefended heart? You might be thinking of things going on in your life, something that happened before, something that's coming up. That's just the mind doing what the mind does. The practice here in meditation is to connect again to love and open to life on life's terms and noticing what happens. Allowing yourself to settle, to take your seat, to be here right now. And maybe in opening to the love and the light that you are, that we are, Can you allow that light, that brilliance, that magnificence to expand, to grow, to radiate from you? Perhaps it's in the form of a prayer, or a wish, or a hope for yourself, for your family, for those sitting around you, for your community, for the world. And then just taking another couple nice deep breaths. And as you do that, as you are ready, just allowing your attention now to come back to the room and back to this place. Oh, it's so good to be here. And true confessions, I've got 7 or 8 pages of notes to get through today. And just in this present moment, I have this sense of having absolutely no idea where this morning is going to go. I hope that doesn't rattle your cage, like, what's this minister up to here? Does he have any idea what's going on? Oh, trust me, I've got more ideas than you can count. But just the presence and the experience of being here this morning is one of those moments where sometimes we make our plans and then Spirit shows up and just like has a, not a different agenda, but an expansive or a deepening agenda. I have to say this morning as I was up just, you know, preparing and thinking about this morning, I got this random thought of how much I love violin music. You know, the times that we've had violin here. And I walk in this morning and Pamela's playing the violin and it's just like, wow, thank you. You know, this is just great. And then your opening song, Luna Misteriosa, is that Mysterious Moon? Was it this week that we had that Harvest Moon? There were two nights this week where I remember I was just stunned by the mysteriousness. Yeah, that's really what it is. The mysterious of the moon and its size and its color and its presence in the night sky. It was just like, wow, you know. And I think I learned it's called a harvest moon. And I think historically, yeah, people would use the moonlight to work in the land or do whatever they did at night. But it was just a fascinating thing. And then just a number of special moments this week that just have helped me just feel so grounded and so at home and so grateful to be here. Tuesday night, yeah, it was Tuesday, right? And this is okay to share? Okay. I've done a bazillion weddings in my career, more than I can count, and I had the honor of presiding over what I think was one of the most, if not the most, meaningful wedding this week at Sanders Beach. Is that what it's called? Yeah, with Kelly and R. Yeah. It's about them. It's not about me. But I think I blubbered my way through it more than they did, because I was so touched by the story of love and just, you know, my own thoughts about marriage, you know, having been divorced twice and, you know, everything like that. And just, you know, but believing, I don't want to get that too far down this rabbit trail. I could talk all day about this, but the what I think about it is a sacrament. Okay. Not with all the religious, cultural, political baggage that comes with this, but it's a holy, sacred moment where, you know, two people come together in the presence of witnesses and the divine and share and express their love and commitment to each other. And it's not like God gives something that is lacking, you know, that the holy man comes and blesses it or whatever, you know, but it's an expression of what's already there. And it's just hard to put into words, but just the presence was so palpable in a beautiful setting with a beautiful couple, even with gnats. There were some gnats that were going around. We had to kind of, you know, get through and whatever. But it was just a beautiful experience. And then the next day on Wednesday, I hope this is okay, I had a chance to go play golf out at Avalon. Avondale, yeah, up in Hayden. First time I've touched my golf clubs all year, and it's it was what? Yeah. I mean, I was able to drive the ball okay, but then everything else just went sideways. But the company was so great. I was with Dennis and Tammy and Nancy, and we just laughed our brains off throughout the whole experience. And afterwards, had a chance to go get dinner and play trivia in the little restaurant that was there. And I think our team did pretty good. And it was just beautiful. And then. Yeah, this was kind of a whirlwind weekend. I did a quick trip to Seattle Friday and Saturday, and the reason I was there is I was leading a board retreat for the Everett Center for Positive Living. That's the church where I've been to speak, you know, and everything, and kind of got acquainted with Unity and everything, and I just a little window into how that meeting went. Part of their work was to just think about the name of their church, and they don't have a mission statement, so I took the liberty to share ours, and they loved it. They were like, oh my God, living love and uplifting lives, we love that. Center for Spiritual Growth, you know, we love that. And I had to kind of resist the temptation to just want to copy that. You know, they said, is that copyrighted? Can we steal it? Can we do it? And I said, I don't care, it's whatever, you know. But they ended up just doing some work and they have some nice things to think about themselves. But it was beautiful to be in that. And the reason I'm telling you that is to think about how this work is spreading and multiplying all over the world, you know. And just I had this visual of, wow, here's a community in northern Idaho in Coeur d'Alene and a community in Everett, Washington, which is about 20 minutes north of, half an hour north of Seattle, and it was just, I mean, it just was kind of this, wow, this is so cool how this stuff works and how this stuff unfolds, and so it was really great. But yeah, I got in yesterday, and you know, I'm here, but sometimes it takes my spirit a while to sort of catch up and get here, and so I think maybe that's some of the, I don't know where things are going to go this morning. All that said, I am excited to share with you this morning, and if you haven't noticed yet, the title of the message today is Finding Love in Unity. So we've been talking the last couple of weeks about finding love in religion, and I want to just touch on a couple of the high points about that, and then today I want to do just a really, it'll be a rapid fire, just overview of the five basic principles of unity, and then over the course of the next few weeks, we'll look into those principles a little bit deeper and kind of sink into that. But I felt like, you know, I really wanted to just have some time to really settle in and review and visit again, you know, this community and the principles that we hold near and dear to our heart and connect again to them. So before we do that, though, I do want to just touch base on a few of the principles that we talked about last week.
Let's see here. Okay. Okay, let's see. Would you mind? Okay, thanks. Yeah, just go ahead and put the next slide. Thank you, Brian. I love your hat, by the way, and the way that your voice is. So we've been talking the last couple of weeks, if you haven't been with us, about finding love in religion. And I want to think about this as we do this, to maybe take off our learner hat or our figure-it-out hat or our, thank you, and, you know, whatever kind of hat it is, and put on our explorer hat. You know, if we can sort of, or put on our explorer glasses, and to think about this, thank you. Think about this as an exploration, okay? We're bringing us curiosity and kindness and open-mindedness, and I'm aware that I can come across pretty strong and pretty dogmatic on some things, and I hope that you can sort of listen through all of that and just receive some of the things that I'm putting up here as offerings for you to consider and you to apply to your life. But the first thing that we talked about with religion is to watch for the emergence of dogma, legalism, and ritualism. Spiritual movements start off with a person or a group of persons having some kind of mystical experience, and from that mystical experience, there can emerge a doctrine, ethics, and rituals. Doctrine around this is how the world is and how we operate and relate to it. Ethics, agreements for how we get along with each other, and then rituals that support the ethics and the dogma. But if we don't come back to that mystical experience of love, doctrine can harden into dogma. Ethics can devolve into legalism, and ritual can devolve into ritualism, or the worship of the ritual. And so, again, the idea is to just watch for this and be mindful for it. Secondly, is to watch for communal, and by communal I mean community trends, from movement to machine to monument. So when a spiritual movement, when a spiritual awakening happens, it begins as a movement, a way out, you know, into people in the community. But if we're not conscious or we're not coming back to love, that movement can shift into a machine, you know, where we're just keeping the gears and the grinding of the machine going. And then if we're still not careful, that machine can become a monument. You know, we hold this organization or this belief or this way of being up, and wow, look at this, isn't it great? And the shift, what happens is there's a shift from being a force for good in the world and serving the world to the world and people serving the monument and worshiping and admiring it. And there's a shift from what happens is that monument then becomes an idol, and it becomes irreligious and not helpful. Here's the idea. Well, let me just come back to this. So how do we overcome this? We return to love. We return to love. And I heard Richard Rohr earlier this week say something that I thought was so good. Love is always outgrowing the containers we try to push it into. I'll say it again. Love is always outgrowing the containers we try to put it in. Okay, love is a beautiful thing. And the mind, when it experiences love, wants to try to control it, manipulate it, or possess it. You know, and this isn't a bad thing. It's part of the human experience. But love has this way of breaking through that control, breaking through that manipulation, breaking through that possession in its expression. Why? For the purpose of bringing our hearts back to love. It can result in the experience of order, disorder, and reorder, or orientation, disorientation, reorientation. You might want to just think about yourself, you know, where am I on that continuum today? You know, do you find yourself in a period of order, or do you feel like, wow, life's a mess, it's chaotic, it's really disoriented, you know, or are you reorienting? I think certainly if we look at a macro picture, you know, our general society and our culture, or our world or whatever, things are really disoriented, really confusing. A lot of things have been thrown off kilter. What if this is all about the working of love, expressing itself? And the invitation here is if you find yourself feeling disoriented, if you find yourself hurt, can you allow your heart to be broken by love? Because when our hearts are broken by love, through that brokenness, the love that's already in here comes out, and new love can come in. It's not always pleasant, and it's not always easy, but the common denominator is love is already there. So return to love. Secondly, honor your path with gentle self-criticism. We talked about this last week, again, in your own life and even in this community here. And if you don't like the word criticism, you could think self-examination or self-reflection, okay? But the idea is to always be open to having your beliefs questioned and challenged. I'm having some of mine. I'm going to tell you a little bit later about how that's even happening, even this morning. But having your beliefs, your judgments, your prejudices challenged and examine them. Why? That keeps your heart, that keeps your soul open and malleable and formable and shapeable to the expression of love. Same thing for this community here. We have five principles that we'll be examining. But we want to be mindful that these principles don't become hardened into dogma or legalism or ritualism, but that we allow love and our ability as human beings to think and to reflect, to examine them. We talked last week about the prophetic voice and how prophetic voices tend to live on the inside of the outside edge of an organization and speak words of admonishment, words of correction, words of encouragement. Okay, but those prophetic voices are kind of the outliers, you know. They're kind of the weirdos, okay. And we have them today. As you think about who the outcasts are in our world today, who are the unlovable? Who are the untouchables? Who are the hard to get to knowable peoples out there? The invitation is to listen, to deeply listen to what they're saying, and be open to what it might be saying to you. Now, the trick in that is to not be negative and not be rebellious, okay? When we're not conscious about that prophetic voice, we can get a spirit of negativity or rebellion to come in, and I think we've had experience that. I've certainly been there, especially in my evangelical Christian days, you know, as I was sort of getting insights into love and all that kind of stuff, I was like, I'm going to, you know, take the sword and change the organization and, you know, be the next great reformer and all that kind of stuff. No. It's always about having gentleness and compassion and love. But that starts with honoring your path. And then honor others' paths with compassion and an eye for judgment. We didn't talk much about this last week, but just want to mention this thing called judgment. You may recall Jesus said, "Judge not, for with the measure you judge, you will also be judged." That's not a command to not judge, even though it sounds like that, because the truth is, we all judge. Consciously and unconsciously, our minds are making judgments. How do I know that? Just notice how many times you say, oh, that's good, or that's bad. When something happens, that's good or bad, that's a judgment. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, but just be aware that that's a judgment. And the trick is, and the key is to realize that the way that we judge is also the way that we judge ourselves. And this gets into Jungian psychology and shadow work and all that kind of stuff, which maybe we'll talk a little bit deeper about that. But when you notice yourself becoming judgy towards someone or something else, allow yourself to come back and notice what's being activated or triggered in me. Because oftentimes those things that trigger us and other people oftentimes can be things that maybe we haven't made peace with in ourselves. And that's the goodness in that. So so be open to that. Another thing I want to say about this is in thinking about others' paths and the love that other people have, only love has the authority to name who you are. Think about that. Only love has the authority to name who you are. Many of us go through seasons of life of questioning, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? When I was in evangelical religion for many, many years, I had no idea who I was. Why? Because I was working so hard to conform and be a part of this community and be a good Christian and please God and everything. And when I left all of that, I don't know who I am. Come back to love and allow love to define that for you. And as other people in your life are defined by love, hold them with that same love and compassion. All right. So today, what I want to shift to now is finding love in unity. Finding love in unity. And this congregation here. And so in the short time that remains, I just want to do a real high-level skipping stone overview of what the five principles are, give you some little teasers of some of the things we'll delve into when we come back and look at them, and then go from there. Okay, so the first principle of unity that we hold here is there is only one presence and power in the universe, God, omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. So just God. There are innumerable names for God in the world today, and we aspire to hold all of them. Spirit, Source. If you grew up in a Christian tradition, it was Father. God is Mother. God is neither masculine nor feminine, and both masculine and feminine. So just, you know, be mindful of that. Transcendent. I really like how it's put in AA, where it's referred to as a higher power or a God of your understanding. Okay? Not mine, but yours. I want to say a good spiritual leader, but that's a judgment, so... A healthy, maybe put it this way, a healthy spiritual climate is a place that creates and holds safe space for the divine, for the sacred, for the transcendent to emerge in you so that you can connect and you can express whatever God transcendent is. You might be thinking, well, what about agnostics? Agnostic means ah, without, Gnostic, knowing. I don't know. I don't know if there's a God, And all of us, maybe you've gone through periods in your life, I sure have, even as a minister, where it's like, I don't know if there is a God. I have no idea. As my perceptions of God and understanding of how God works, it's just like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going on. But that's welcome. What about atheists? Yeah, that's welcome too. The word ah, again, without, theist, knowing, no God. There is no God. You know, it's only materialism or what can be seen and known. That's welcome too, okay? But we understand that and we affirm that. And then these three words, omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. They've been around for a while. Omnipotent simply means all-powerful. Omniscient or omnipresent means everywhere, and omniscient means all-knowing. When we think about this, it can be helpful to differentiate or notice the difference between the essence of the divine and the transcendent and the working or the effect or the fingerprint or the breath of the divine or the transcendent. When those things get blended, oftentimes that limits the essence of what the divine and what the transcendent is. I want to just play a little bit with this omnipresent one, because this is an interesting one. When we say God is all present, are you familiar with the term pantheism? Pantheism is, you know, God is everything, okay? There's another word called panentheism. It's a very close cousin of it, but it talks about God in everything, God as through everything, God as everything. Now again, wherever you land on that, the one invitation to consider is everyone and everything. So think about those places or those people or those experiences that seem absent of God or absent of the divine, and be willing to open and look there, and maybe you might find some little vestige of the divine for you to discover. Okay? because, yeah, whatever the divine or whatever the transition, whatever your belief in it is, God is everywhere and in everything and in all people. And I really want to underscore that, all people, not most people, not almost every person, but everyone. Yeah. You laugh like I do too, because there are some people I think, really? Them? Divine? I got news for you. Yeah. Yeah, them. Okay? So we'll talk more about that, okay? Secondly, the second principle of unity is the presence of God dwells in each person. So I just talked about that, okay? God dwells in every person. Something that can come up with this when we think about other people's experience of God is this notion of sin. Some of you are looking awfully spiritual to me right now. Did he just say that word? Yeah, I did. I did. And one of the things I like to do, or I have a passion to do and a curiosity to do, is take back words that religion, particularly Christianity, has kind of hijacked and distorted, and see if we can unpack it and bring it back in its original meaning. But this word sin, its literal meaning means to miss the mark, okay? We as a culture have made sin all about behaviors. Growing up, you know, I was exposed to sin taxes, right? Which were like taxes on alcohol, tobacco, gambling, and now in the state of Washington, marijuana. You know, we just tax the bejesus out of it because it's sinful, all right? The invitation here is to not look at sin as behavior, but sin is a condition of the heart, not in a punitive sense, but in a sense of sin being those times maybe where we forget about our connection to love. We forget about our connection to each other. We forget about our connection to the earth, and then this therefore act in a way that is harmful or hurtful. And I heard something the other day, and I just unpacked some of this stuff with you, and I don't know how I feel about this yet, but somebody said this: what if original sin was a game that we all signed up for? I was driving the car, and I almost had to stop and pull over, because I was like, what? You know, because I've spent my life saying it's hogwash, it's BS, it's like ridiculous, you know, I mean, just tracing the gut. But I said, what if original sin was a game that we all signed up for? And I was thinking to myself, oh, well, okay, we're spiritual beings, have a human experience. Could part of the human experience be this brushing up against with this thing called sin? Sin not being punishment, and you're going to go to hell when you die afterwards, but sin being the experience of coming in and out of connection with each other and with each other's love. And I thought, maybe there's something there to that. I don't know yet. Don't quote me on that. Don't say, Reverend James said that original sin is a game. And No. I'm still working that out in my own life, and we'll talk some more about this, okay? But the presence of God dwelling in each person, this is something that we call Christ consciousness. So when we light this candle, the Christ candle, it's that consciousness and the awareness of the presence of the divine in everyone and everything. And it's just one of many names for that. We've talked about that before. Okay, third one. Human beings create their experience by the activity of their thinking. Everything in the manifest realm has its beginning in thought. This is one of those, I have to confess, I'm learning with you. And because I have a religious scar from my evangelical days of the health and wealth and prosperity gospel. You know, it was a gospel that said Jesus wants everybody healthy, wealthy, and prosperous. And if you're unhealthy, not wealthy, and not prosperous, it's because you have some fault in your belief, you have some hidden sin in your life, you have something that you're holding on to, you know. And so I have this little vestige of an allergy toward it. But just as spirit would have it this morning, I met a gentleman named Doug, who's sitting over here, and he told me a story of how healing works in his life. And I've asked him if he would be willing to share a little bit about how that works, because as you shared that with me, I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you for your courage, because it's something that I'm still wanting to learn and grow about. So do you mind talking about that?
Which one?
The submarine, okay. In your back, yeah.
Yes, I suffered from kidney stones. And went to the hospital and went through all the rigmarole and what they do to get rid of the kidney stone. And I read an article by a gentleman in Reader's Digest that invented a submarine to go inside of his body and blow up the kidney stone. And I believe in visualization. I believe if you can picture something in your mind, it can become reality, because that's how the brain works. So I decided, okay, I'll go down, I got a kidney stone, I go down inside of my body and I'll in a submarine and I'll blow it up, and that's what I did. I could see that kidney stone, I blew it up and I dilated and got rid of the kidney stone. I've done this 4 times. So visualization is one of our greatest tools that God gave us, no matter what it is. If you can picture it, it can become reality.
Wow. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Doug. And I know many of you have stories. And if you do, let me know, because I want us to tell those stories and encourage and inspire one another about the spiritual healing tools and skills that are available to us to manifest in our life. It was funny. I was reviewing this morning and just getting all furrowed in my brow. And then, again, I had this random thought about a violin. And it's like, okay, did I manifest the violin this morning? Huh? And I love what Julie said. How did you say it? Sometimes we just...
The flow is always there.
Okay. The flow is always there. And, yeah, how did that...
Yeah, the flow is always around us. And sometimes we just reach up and grab it. And then it's manifested.
Yeah, I love that. My partner in love, Lisa, has this thing about finding parking, manifesting parking spaces. It's just amazing. We can go into a parking lot, and it is jam-packed, and she'll do whatever it is that she does, and some car will pull out right in front of the store, and we'll just pull right in. And I just, every time, it's like, I marvel and amaze. And I guess if I'm honest with you now, just being present to what's present as I tell you that, I think there's a little bit of jealousy that I have in my heart. I want me some of that. I want me more of that in my life.
You know? Perfect parking all the way to your spot.
Perfect parking all the way to my spot. Okay.
And then when you get it, say thank you, God.
And when I get it, say thank you, God.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. What? More, please? Okay. What? What's that? No. Go. Say it again.
When you pull into the parking lot with a 40-foot long truck, does that close down?
And then what did you say, Kelly?
Yes, thank you more, please.
Yes, thank you more, please. Okay, I just want to grow in that, okay? I mean, this is an area where I look forward to growing in this community.
Hail, universe, full of grace, let me find a parking place.
Hail, universe, full of grace, let me find a parking place. Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Well, and again, just know that I welcome any and all of those stories. And, you know, please let me know, because it expands my thinking and challenges some of my beliefs and my prejudices and biases about prayer. And I'll just say one more thing about this. I know it's getting late, but thank you for bearing with me. You know, my dad just died 2 months ago. And there was no shortage of prayers for the healing of the hematoma in his gut and what was going on, you know. And he passed. And I'm like, you know, was there a lack of faith or a lack of skill or a lack of tools or something that would end that? Or is prayer maybe about the acceptance of things as they are? I don't know. I'm just trying to find out where all of that intersects. But that leads into the fourth principle that we talk about here, is prayer and meditation alter our consciousness and our direct link to our God self. God willing, I'm going to be offering a class sometime this winter on Joel Goldsmith and his book, The Infinite Way. I don't know if any of you here are familiar with that. But one of the things that he talks about in that book with regards to affirmative prayer, and you may hear that word around here, and if you're newer, it's like, what do you mean by affirmative prayer? It's simply that in prayer, we aspire to pray the solution, not the problem. And we also talk about prayer as not being so much about what you who you pray to, or even what you pray for, but where you pray from. That place of faith and belief. And one of the things Joel Goldsmith writes that I'm still figuring out in my own life, this is a head blower here, is that prayer is not so much about the consciousness of the prayee, but the prayer. And I'm just like, okay, I'm still working that one out as well. But we're going to explore that together as a community and really grow in our understanding of how prayer and meditation alter our consciousness. St. Paul, in one of his epistles, talked about having a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what it was. And he talked about praying earnestly and fervently for God to remove that thorn in the flesh, and God didn't. And the insight that he had from that was that God reveals its power in weakness. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind as we think about our lives and what we want to create together. As we create, as we move forward and manifest, which we do, let's be open to how we are manifested and we are created in that process. There's a flow, there's a reciprocity, there's a relationship that goes in with that, that I find fascinating with prayer and meditation. And as you can tell, I still have a lot to learn about that. All right, last one, live these principles, practice and apply them. And we do that here, and we aspire to do that with compassion, with patience, with resilience, and most importantly, in community. As I've been around the church during the week, I've just been so blessed by the different communities that are here meeting and that I've had a chance to meet and look forward to meeting some more. And just want to invite you as you consider, if you're not already connected to this community here, how might I want to connect and engage and be involved with the beings and the people that are here? Because it's amazing. But I want to just bring all of this back to some of the ideas that I introduced at the beginning and realizing again, remember this, always come back to love. Let love be your anchor. And as you do, remember that love is always breaking those little containers we try to put it in. So allow your heart to be broken open by love and return again and again and again with wonder, awe, curiosity, and I would also add laughter and play. Yeah, it's fun to play. I walk the land out there oftentimes, and there's the labyrinth and the fire pit and the playground, and I just get these visions of just being able to laugh and play together, you know, and just, I'm prone to take myself way too seriously. It was so fun about playing golf this week, to just get out and just laugh, you know, and have fun. I want to just leave you with this thought. One of the things that Jesus said was that he is the way, the truth, and the life. So he said that, you know. What did he mean by that? Christians over the years have interpreted that to mean, well, yes, you've got to believe this and this and this and this and this about Jesus, and believe this and this and this and this and this about particularly his death on the cross. But to broaden your aperture into the wholeness of Jesus' life and teachings, I offer this question. What if your way is the way? What would shift if your way was the way? We'll have fun discovering that. Amen? Amen. And so it is.
Thank you.